Welcome to Speak for Yourself. I'm Jason Whitlock. That is Marcellus Wiley, that dude. Coming up, we'll tell you if Dak Prescott or Jason Garrett is under more pressure in Dallas.
And if Laker fans should be encouraged about LeBron's Lakers. But we start today with a Whitlock like every day. What you got today, big dog?
Oh, I've got some Eli Manning. In a 23-20 loss to the Atlanta Falcons last night, Eli Manning threw for 399 yards, a touchdown, and zero interceptions. My man Booger McFarland, the Booger. Monday Night Football broadcaster, spent much of the night subtly criticizing Manning. This morning, a writer for the NFL Network said Eli played poorly despite his gaudy statistics. A writer for NewJersey.com called for the Giants to bench Eli. Bleacher Report whined that Odell Beckham Jr. isn't reaching his potential because of Eli. There seems to be universal agreement among the media that Eli Manning is the reason the New York Giants stink. Virtually any time there's a universal opinion held in the media, that's a key indicator a lie is being told, a narrative has been rigged. Human beings disagree. It's what we do naturally. Groupthink is a man-made social media-enhanced disaster.
Message.
The negative groupthink battering Eli Manning's reputation is orchestrated by the social media forces determined to elevate Odell Beckham Jr.'s standing in professional football. OBJ is what Silicon Valley-obsessed media want the face of professional football to look like. Emotional, sensitive, fashionable, less masculine. Eli represents the patriarchy. He's old school. He's legacy NFL. He's the son of Archie and the little brother of Peyton. Let me be clear. I'm not suggesting that Booger McFarland or a writer at the NFL Network is part of some plot to elevate OBJ. What I'm saying is that all of us in the media want social media traction. Our bosses evaluate us on followers, likes, and retweets. We're addicted to the interaction we get on our smartphones. OBJ is the king of NFL social media. He has nearly 12 million Instagram followers and nearly 4 million Twitter followers. Eli is OG, not IG. Mm. He's not on Twitter or the gram. My point, there's no social media downside to criticizing Eli Manning. There is no Eli Hive waiting to attack you if you go too far or over the top in your criticism of the two-time Super Bowl winner. Bzzz. OBJ has a very active Beckham Hive. Everybody in the media knows this. My argument is that a lot of the Eli criticism is nothing more than honey put on display to attract the bees from the Beckham Hive, or it's bug spray to keep the Beckham Hive from attacking. The only fair assessment from last night's game is that the Giants' offensive line is absolutely horrible. It's so bad that on a night when Eli was able to connect with Beckham and Sterling Shepard downfield, the New York offensive line still couldn't open consistent running lanes for a sensational rookie running back, Saquon Barkley. Eli played at a winning level. The Giants' offensive line did not. The nonstop assault on Eli's reputation is unfair and a reflection of social media's power to undermine honest discourse. All right, joining the desk now are Fox NFL analysts Tony Gonzalez and Mark Schlereth. Marcellus, I'll start with you.
Yes.
I believe the over-the-top criticism of Eli is unfair. What do you say?
I hear you. I don't hear that Booger McFarland has something subtle to say when your name is Booger. guess what? Nothing subtle about Booger on Monday Night Football. But I understand where you're coming from, and I respect it. However, Eli is playing the most important position in football, maybe the most important position in sports, in terms of it's not just based on production, but inspiration. That position has to have energy. That position has to go beyond the numbers. And what I see from Eli is not adequate numbers, not adequate production. Last night,
399 yards.
Yeah, one touchdown. We get judged by points, not necessarily how, between the 20s, but respect. And more importantly, the missed opportunities, the frustration that has now been muted in Odell Beckham Jr. from the conversation he had with John Mara and his public statements about Odell. And you can still see that growing frustration, Odell knowing he's open on the same play they practiced all week long and not getting hit on target.
8 for 143.
Respect. And guess what? Odell is a guy who's at an NFL record pace in terms of production. So when you say 8 for 143, Odell wants to see that every single week at minimum. Beyond the missed opportunities, beyond the lack of energy at the position, I see Eli Manning not stirring the pot as the team leader and face of this franchise for so many years and saying, hey, guys, rally behind me. Not only my production, but by my leadership. And if you put all those things together in that gumbo, it leads to all the criticism of Eli Manning.
You know what's interesting about the whole leadership aspect of this? Remember when Eli came in the league initially and it was like, this guy doesn't have enough juice. There's no energy. He's like Eeyore. And then he wins some championships and it's, oh, the guy has ice water in his veins.
Yeah,
like,
yeah.
His personality never changed. Right. That is who he is. I think you look at this team in general and all you have to understand is on a fourth down play to go in to score, they chose to try to throw it as opposed to giving it to number 26. Wasn't that like, wasn't
you that?
Was it the?
They were getting some quarterback sneaks late.
Quarterback
too.
Sneaks, two of them. Two,
yeah,
right.
And horrible. And my issue is, you're telling me all I need to know if I read the tea leaves about what you think of your team. Our offensive line blows. Mm. We're not any good.
Yeah.
Now I understand this from a player standpoint. There comes a time in everybody's career that you don't want to be hit anymore. Eli is there, right? I mean, there comes a time where
not last night.
But he played well. The concern to me though is the plays you don't make. Like, that's the concern for Eli. Like, they run that flat combination it's a layered route with a flat to OBJ, gets his head around. It is wide open.
Yes.
That's the first read in the progression. 100% of the time, you got to throw that, and you choose, for whatever reason, not to throw it. There's a couple slants that are wide open in the middle of the field where your timing is off. I think your timing is mostly off because you don't trust the guys in front of you. Hmm. So it's sped up your mechanics. But I think the bigger issue is not Eli. I think the bigger issue, you spent $15 million on a left tackle who suddenly forgot how to block, and you don't have an offensive line that can protect your quarterback adequately. And as we get older, shoot, I don't know about you, Tony, but I was like, yeah, I'd rather not pull and have that collision. That's just me, you know. That's where I was.
Tap absolutely. Out. And you know, that brings up the point. That's the point I want to add to this conversation. Yeah, Eli missed some plays. But I think we have to, and yes, because Eli is getting older, it's clear that he's winding down. I would not be surprised if he retires at the end of this year.
Mm-hmm.
Because his lack of production, Odell Beckham cannot make those one-handed catches anymore. He's not doing that flashy stuff. He did it last night. I mean,
he dropped a two-point conversion.
He dropped a two-point conversion, but we want to see Odell Beckham do this type of stuff. He wants to see himself do this type of stuff. Jerry Rice, when I was in the league and I was winding down my career, I could see it coming. I was on a bus with Jerry, and I said, hey, Jerry, when do you know it's done? And he said, well, I'm going to tell you about me, the way I look at it. He goes, play till the wheels fall off. And I started thinking, and then I went to, I talked to Warren Moon about it, and he's like, look, you probably should get out whenever you can. But he played till the wheels fall off. They had to cut mm-hmm. him out of the league. Mm-hmm. And I said, well, I'm going to walk out. I made a decision to walk out on my terms, okay? I went to a Pro Bowl and still retired. This is what happens. When you decide to play till the wheels fall off, and you go past your prime and it's over.
The
wheels fall off. And you're going to get cut out of the league. And a lot of these guys that you have to make that decision as a player. It could happen to it. It could happen to LeBron James eventually. It's going to happen. It happened to Peyton Manning. He was not the same player. And I think right now Eli is not that two-time Super Bowl champ anymore. He cannot make the throws like he used to. Those quarterback sneaks. He's got to be one of the worst athletes in the NFL right now.
Ever.
And that's not a knock against him. He's getting old.
Eli's tires have been slashed by that offensive line. Seriously. And again, I'm not sitting here saying Eli's a Pro Bowl quarterback, but I watched last night's game. And for people to come out of that game, oh, Eli stinks. Eli's in the way of Odell. That's just not true based on what happened last night. Eli stood in the pocket several times and took some hits. He got rid of the ball before the rush got there. But that offensive line from start to finish that entire game was horrible. Anytime you had that kind of downfield passing and you got that kid in the backfield, Saquon Barkley, and you can't open up any holes for him on a consistent basis, that offensive line is horrible. We've gone too far with the shredding of Eli Manning.
You think he's slick. I just heard you, too. In a vacuum, you just said, last night, Eli.
Yeah, last night.
This criticism's been going on for years of Eli, you wanted to halt because of one game? You're based on your record. You're based on your resume. And let's name some facts off of Eli's resume. Since he got into the league, he leads the league in turnovers, interceptions. And by 35 interceptions is second place. He leads that guy. Since 2013, 35th. In completion percentage, 38th in passer rating. Last time I checked, there are only 32 teams. So that means some guys who don't even play that often get it out of there and perform better than Eli Manning in major statistical categories. The thing about Eli that is really damning right now, if you look at this, is he's in a position where he knows it's over in terms of his greatness is behind him, right? And he knows from his brother's experience the best offensive lineman you could ever have is the quarterback. I played against Peyton Manning year in, year out. Outside of Tariq Glenn, give me the rest of those guys every single day. Send a limo, make sure they show up. Oh, I forgot. Peyton Manning's the quarterback. He's going to get rid of the ball. He's going to make the smart read. On that slant route, he's going to hit him in progression, right, in pace, in stride. And Eli continuously misses those. And then we're going to blame Odell, who saved Eli's career by giving him the energy and
juice.
Again,
I'm not blaming Odell. I'm blaming the offensive line. I personally know some of the Colts linemen during the Peyton Manning era, and they were a little bit better than what you're giving them credit for.
I will say this. One thing that ends up happening to you is the timing of routes and route progressions are all tied to the drops. And if you get to the point where you speed up your mechanics because you don't trust as a quarterback that your offensive line is going to be able to protect you, that timing of those route combinations and the throw of that quarterback is just going to be off. And that's where you see some of the inaccuracies that he has over the last couple of years.
I'm going to take his whole career in totality.
Oh, let's go.
At no point did I ever watch Eli Manning and go, he's that dude. He's right. One of the three or four or five best quarterbacks in the NFL.
Yeah, that's real.
He's always been spotty. So you can list all his career interceptions, turnovers. That's who Eli has always been.
Yeah.
He's never been a guy that's carried the team. He was never his brother. And so all I'm saying is now we reach this point where, oh, my God, the New York Giants. And I'm watching the guy that every time he takes two steps back, there's almost a defensive lineman mirroring his steps into the backfield. It's you can't function. No quarterback can function with that little pass protection, that little run support from the running game. It can't happen. And so Eli played a very good game last night for Eli Manning. And for people to come out of this game as if last night was some proof that he's either holding the team back or Odell Beckham Jr. back, that's a joke to me.
Okay, let me apologize. I didn't play D-tackle. Jeff Saturday was a beast. But other than that, but the rest of them dudes.
They had a guy named Ryan Lilger.
Really?
He was very good. Trust me. He's from Kansas City. I followed his career.
I can tell he's from
you
Kansas
played
City.
Against him. You played against
him. I can tell he's from Kansas City. The way you just gave him props like that. He may have been really good, but Glenn was the only one. You're basically going with the argument that he's been inconsistent his entire career.
Absolutely.
So why are we now exaggerating his inconsistencies? I think it's because he got exposed after he got energized by Odell. When I throw the life raft out there in terms of NFL production at a record level at the receiver position, and Eli all of a sudden starts to get a little jolt of energy and plays well for games within the last 3 years, and then Odell with his injuries and last year missing so many games, it exposed Eli even more so, especially when the wheels are falling off. I think that's where
tires slashed. His tires have been slashed more than they've fallen off. Time for some big stories. Tony Gonzalez is back, and we're joined now by Super Bowl champion James Harrison. Let's move to Dallas, where the Cowboys just made a major move to enhance their offense, trading a first-round pick to the Raiders for Amari Cooper. The move gives the Cowboys the number one receiver they've been lacking, but also takes away the biggest excuse for their offense's lackluster performance, which should amp up the pressure on both Dak Prescott and Jason Garrett. My contention is that more pressure to me is on Jason Garrett than Dak Prescott. Jason Garrett, I think this is his eighth or ninth year. He's had his shot. He's a 500 football coach. He's supposed to add some kind of offensive advantage to the Cowboys that I just haven't seen, particularly since Tony Romo disappeared. I believe this is a move to, as I said yesterday, to help Ezekiel Elliott, to help Dak Prescott. But to me, the primary pressure is on Jason Garrett. I think Jerry Jones likes Dak Prescott.
I think it's on Dak Prescott, just like you said. It's to help Dak Prescott, or it can expose Dak Prescott, because now there's no excuses. If you want to be the future franchise quarterback, we gave you a number one wide receiver.
Let's go. Season.
Yeah, I hear you, but let's go to the schoolyard and play. We got toys now. Let's go out there and see it. And if you look at Scott Linehan, you look at Jason Garrett, they've called plays where receivers have been open. They've called plays where they've moved the ball down the field. Dak Prescott had a good game, certainly by his standards, last week. They've looked at the film, the all 22, and said, Dak, you missed that one. Dak, you missed that one. Tony Romo kept pointing it out. Respectfully, he tried his best.
Why do we act like quarterbacks never miss?
I get it. I get it. But then if you're going to miss, make a lot. You know what I mean? Like, don't just keep missing and then make a few, because then that's when the seesaw is out of balance. All this is going to expose or ensure that Dak Prescott is the franchise quarterback. But we're going to see this year, because now he has what he needs.
I mean, that's some of the things that he had, even when he had, you know, Dez. He had opportunities where he could get the ball downfield, and he just didn't make those throws. And I'm with you guys. I think it puts a lot of pressure on Dak. You're going to get to see and show that you're that franchise quarterback that Jerry Jones says that you are. And if you aren't, then it's going to expose that you're not that guy.
You don't think he's a franchise quarterback?
I don't think he's that guy that's going to be able to sit in there and give you, you know, a consistent 273-plus 100 yards a game and go out there and win you a game. I think he's a guy that's going to keep you in a game. He can have the abilities to go out there and give you something if the run game is going, because the play action will help. But I don't think he's a guy that's going to sit out there and just come in and win you a game.
Like I said yesterday, I am excited about this trade, because it's going to answer all the questions that we've been talking about all year about Dak Prescott. The pressure is definitely on Dak Prescott. Jason Garrett, I don't think he's going anywhere. First of all, who wants that job to come work for Jerry Jones? Nothing against Jerry Jones, but Jerry Jones
pays $3 to $5 million.
Yeah, if you're in the cash, if you're just in the cash, but if you're into actually,
if you're
able to have
America,
but if you want to control the team and do it your way, you can't go there and be Frank Sinatra. You're not gonna be able to do it your way. You got Mr. Jones up there.
Who gets to do that?
A lot of guys. Jay Gruden. I mean, Tom Gruden is doing it right now. There's a lot of players.
Sean McVay.
They get to come
on, man. You know they got freedom out there. It's some freedom out there.
I agree.
It's some freedom out there.
But he had to earn it, and he had to follow it behind.
He was 30 years old. He didn't earn anything. They were just like, dang. You get into a room with Sean McVay, you're like, okay, whatever you said, let's do this.
What you want? I want everything. You got it. Come on in.
So going back to it, Dak Prescott clearly has more, and he should. I think this is a great opportunity for Dak to actually get out there, and let's see what you can do now. You got the running back. Now you can put Cole Beasley back in the slot, which is where he's very, very good at. You got that number one receiver, legitimate. I don't know if he's an upper end number one receiver, but he's a number one receiver. All that pressure is on you. Let's go see what you got. And I hope he comes. I'll tell you, I don't know if you guys had a chance to actually hang out with this kid. He's a really good kid. I hope it works out for him, but let's see it. And the Cowboys now can say, just like you said, James, I'm like, if you're a franchise quarterback, prove it now. Because if I'm going to give you $30 million or more, it was what these quarterbacks are getting now, you better go out there and put some numbers up the rest of the season.
If the Cowboys don't make the playoffs, I'll take any bet any of y'all want to offer. Jason Garrett gets fired, and Dak comes back as the quarterback.
Well, he might come back as the quarterback, and he might get the contract at the hometown discount that he doesn't desire. I'm not saying that.
So how is there not more pressure on Garrett?
Because the pressure is not necessarily tied to the results. Like, you could get rid of Jason Garrett just to say, hey, I'm going to get this hometown cheaper prospect, and then I'm going to draft at that position and try and go really big going forward. The Dallas Cowboys may look to do that, but what they have right now is what's dynastic in the NFL, tripods. You play with one. When you got Big Ben when he's rolling, right. Antonio Brown, Le'Veon Bell, that's a tripod. Go back to the Cowboys, Emmitt Smith, Michael Irvin, Troy Aikman. Once you get quarterback, receiver, running back, everyone on defense is there and says, no excuses. That offense has to roll. Denver Broncos, you want to go back to those days. Like, every team that I've seen that's been dynastic has had those positions covered. If Dak is the answer, he's going to be dynastic in this offense.
What does dynastic mean? I never heard that word.
That's dynastic. That's a Colombian word.
You rolling, brother.
To a big story about Amari Cooper's old team, the Raiders, according to Marcus Thompson of the Athletic, quarterback Derek Carr has a fractured relationship with the team, which was made worse after film appeared to show Carr crying after getting sacked in Oakland's week 6 loss to the Seahawks. Carr, who had only tweeted once so far this season, pushed back in multiple tweets today, writing, quote, on the ground, I yelled, get me up, get me. Then I got to the sideline and yelled again. not one tear, not one time. There is the truth. People will click on it because it sounds crazy, but stop playing with me. People can try all they want to tear us apart, but it's not happening to the real ones.
Smoke from Derek Carr?
Yeah, and
where they do that at?
I think Derek Carr has issues in his locker room. Mm. I don't think it's related to crying on the field. I tend to buy Derek Carr's explanation here of what he said transpired. But even if he did cry on the field after getting injured, I don't think that tears apart your relationship in the locker room. So, I believe Derek Carr has some issues in the Raiders locker room? Yes. Related to crying? No.
I think it is related to crying, but it doesn't start with crying. Let's be real. He has a balling and branding issue, and the balling has made it fractured in the locker room because you know how it goes. Most popular dudes usually are the ballers. If you're not balling, then all of a sudden those jokes not that funny, bro. Everything you do gets graded a different way, and the criticism gets greater. And then he loses the branding argument when you're not like the great quarterbacks of the Raiders lore. You think about it. If you go Jim Plunkett, if you want to go back Kent Stabler, even Rich Gannon, there was a certain balling and branding that the Raiders really buy into and the fans purchase. And then when they have a quarterback who's throwing more interceptions than touchdowns and he's crying, I said, and all of a sudden you lost 2/3 of what you need. Now all you need is the coach to bail you out. But I don't think John Gruden's the type to bail you out. He ain't throwing you a life raft. So, yeah, I think he has real issues in Oakland.
Yeah, I'm going to go with you. I don't believe it has anything to do with crying. I mean, the situation is, you know, it's they're saying it's fire. So it got to be something going on. But I don't think it's related to him crying. It didn't look like he was crying. It looked like he had that cry face. But the tears weren't. That's that cry. But the tears not coming out. So I can buy his explanation that he was saying, but like I said, I feel like it's something else going on other than him crying. Like that's not going to be it.
I think that's funny. I mean, he hasn't tweeted all year, one tweet all year, and then he gets called for being a crybaby.
No, nobody wants
to. It's like little kid.
Come on.
Don't call me a crybaby. I'm not crying. My little 8-year-old, when he cries, I'm like, stop crying. He's like, I'm not crying. I'm not trying to cry. And you know, I do acting class. If this is happy. This is crying, right? That's crying.
But it's not a
That's
tear.
Crying.
It's not a tear coming out.
And do you lose respect, though, because of that? Yes, you do. Yes, you do. I think so. Especially, tell me if you were playing against him and he had done that the week before, or even now, as soon as you get near him, what are you guys chirping? What are you defensive players chirping in this guy's ear?
That moment.
And if I'm on his team.
That moment.
You can't do that no more.
I'm going to go a cut deeper though, on what's really going on here. Honestly, if you go back, Miko Grimes, the wife of the
Brett
Tampa
Grimes.
Bay.
Brett Grimes, yeah.
Yeah, wife of that defensive back. She tweeted out last year that there's a rift between the offensive line and Derek Carr. And I think it's real. Derek Carr is super religious, and he's playing in the Bay, which is super secular. And he's playing for an offensive line that's, particularly last year, was super woke and super social justice warrior. There was a disconnect between this religious conservative quarterback and his offensive line. And he's in the Bay, where the religious stuff doesn't play as well as it does in Middle America and other parts of America. That's the disconnect, and now people are just piling on. Guy gets hurt on the field and puts on a cry face. If you've been hurt on the field, you put on a cry face. It doesn't mean you cried, but you put on a cry face. And so they're just going at this dude.
Okay, I know you wanted to go here. I got it in my notes. You want to go to that level? Damn, all right. All right, this might be our last show. Let's do it. No, I know a few of the guys on their offensive line, and the anthem issue was really a problem with those guys. And it really fractured it. And I think his base was the religion aspect, not so much a workplace issue, but certainly schism in the locker room. Let's be real about this. This happened in the Bay Area before, and with success. Mark Jackson was out there balling for the Golden State Warriors as the coach, out there putting up numbers and helping that team improve. But behind the scenes, what fractured their relationship in that organization was simple. Another guy who, as you say, is religified, and an organization that doesn't see it the same way, and that sometimes interrupts whatever you're doing on the field or on the sidelines in that example.
I'm going to go a cut further.
Oh, man, I ain't got that in my notes.
Y'all going deep. No,
no, I'm out. I'm tapping out.
I'm just trying to keep what I got going.
I'm going to go a cut further.
Watch, listen.
Again, when you talk about that national anthem deal, and this is where politics used to not be a part of the locker room. Leave that outside. Leave religion. We've now injected that into the locker room, and people are making value judgments of people based on their political positions. It's not appropriate for sports. You should leave that out of the locker room, but that's where we are in 2018, and Derek Carr is a victim of it.
I don't even know if it was out the locker room. When I played, it was in the locker room, but it stayed in the locker room, so we could beef it out, and you weren't coming in there, investigate reporting, social media, Instagram, and live in where it got out, and then emotions and it grained the population outside the locker room, which galvanized and started to disrupt our locker room. When we had beef, the beef stayed in the ring. And then we just were able to go forward. Now, those get exposed and you got issues.
And like you said, going forward with this, as the rest of the year comes out, he responded to this. The whole locker room knows
now.
He responded. Obviously, it hit a nerve in him. Mm-hmm. He isn't playing that well this year. That's all there is to it. And this compounded with the crying and the religion and then all this other stuff, the social injustice, standing for the anthem. This isn't a good look for them. And this is why I believe Gruden is get fire selling everybody on that team.
Marshawn Lynch telling you, injured reserve.
Yeah, this kid, yeah. I would be shocked if he's there next year playing quarterback for the Raiders.
It's weird. He has some numbers that suggest he's playing better under Gruden, under the Jack Del Rio. The worst is, the most damning is the record. One win, and then the fact that he's thrown more interceptions. Everything else is actually improved.
Relocation to Jacksonville next year, and let's see what's going on with Derek Carr. And I know they spent a bunch of money on Blake Bortles,
like
moving to
the
South. Whitlock and Wiley, we're joined now by Yahoo Sports NBA insider Chris Haynes.
Yes, sir.
Let's move to the NBA, where LeBron and the Lakers lost to the Spurs in overtime last night, with LeBron missing a pair of crucial free throws down the stretch and a potential game winner as time expired. The Lakers are now 0-3, but after the game, LeBron said he's taking their slow start in stride.
It's a process. I get it. And we'll be fine. So, you know, I didn't come here thinking we were going to be, you know, blazing storms, you know, right out the gate. It's a process, and I understand it.
All right, the question off the game is, encouraged or discouraged about LeBron's ability to close at the end of the game? I thought making the big three, obviously to send it overtime, was huge. But LeBron at the free throw line late in games is
always
just factual. It's just not good. He didn't close out on Rudy Gay at the three. I would be a little discouraged, I guess, about LeBron as a closer if I'm a Laker fan.
I'm discouraged as well. A game where you saw greater effort. You saw some lineups that said, okay, suggested that this Laker team will be fine once they stop playing the top of the Western Conference. You know, you talk about a Portland, Houston, and obviously what you see last night with San Antonio. But LeBron, it's funny, people pointed this out over the years. LeBron James, watch him at the free throw line. Kelvin Washington, Fox Sports Radio, used to always sit there and say, watch LeBron at the free throw line. And he always takes a peek at someone or something in the crowd. And he's like, when he does that, he's missing it. And it was deadly in terms of his accuracy and pinpointing LeBron James just not being in the zone late game clutch moments. But that said, Lakers have bigger issues than LeBron as a closer. Some of those lineups, Golden State can go small lineup and that's their depth lineup.
Yeah.
If I'm San Antonio and other teams, go big against the Lakers. They don't have a paint presence. If you want to call JaVale McGee that, good luck. They're really slight in the paint, and I think that got exposed.
Well, sticking to the question, I'm going to say I'm encouraged because LeBron James has proven that he can hit big shots in close moments, and he's proven that over the last few years. Now, I'm discouraged if I'm relying on him to make clutch free throws down the stretch.
Right.
That's where it is a problem. But I will say this. I think he has certain glue key guys that he can dish it to, draw the defense in, dish it to have them hit big shots. Those two guys I'm seeing thus far, Kyle Kuzma and Josh Hart. And we're talking about lineups and changing things of that nature. Why is Josh Hart not in that start lineup already? Mm-hmm. Yeah, I know it's three games in, but
branding.
But before we move, we'll get there in a second, but I want to stay here on LeBron for a minute. Look, man, for years, Skip Bayless was criticized by some people in the media for questioning whether LeBron was clutch at closing time. I think over time, Skip's position has become more legitimate. And I think Skip, I heard Skip this morning making this point, and I totally agree with him. This is why I'm discouraged. End of the game, he just missed those two big free throws, but he had a chance at the end of the game to go back into the paint and create something for himself or for others, as you're saying. He settles for a three-pointer in a one-point game. That, to me, is clear evidence he's avoiding contact and going back to the free throw line. That's what I find discouraging.
Yeah, when Skip first arrived, you know, when the Planet Rock landed, when it landed on LeBron, LeBron didn't land on it, you're like, dang, Skip, chill out. But there's been more validation, more credence to that argument by the day in terms of him at the free throw line.
Yeah.
I will bail LeBron out last night, and I hope this
help is correct. Help him out. Help him out,
he hits the clutch three in regulation. So LeBron's thinking from three, I'm money right now. I mean, that was a deep three as well, and it obviously helped him survive regulation at least. Maybe LeBron was saying, I'm still hot from this position. He's showing videos of him in practice destroying guys from half court shooting three-pointers. Maybe he's relying on his improved three-point shooting a little too much, and it's not so much I'm not a clutch guy in those moments.
Well, let's keep in mind that Luke Walton, after the game, shared his frustration with the lack of calls the Lakers have been getting over the last few games. LeBron James, even though he didn't address it in the scrum, he was very adamant that he was getting pulled and hung on, and there was no whistle. So I feel like he believed that if he went to, you know, starting trying to drive to the hole in that last play of the game, he wouldn't have got the benefit of the doubt.
Oh, good point.
And I think that's why he felt he had
LeBron
to
LeBron gets calls late, and I think late, and that shouldn't have been a concern. I would have put the refs in that position. And again, I just think he's a better playmaker from down low. It's easy because he draws so much attention and it opens up things for other people. I got to say I've come around to Skip's position.
Yeah.
There's an issue with LeBron at crunch time that's been there. We saw it in the Dallas Mavericks series with the Miami Heat. He's overcome it for some stretches.
Yeah.
But it may have reared its ugly head back here in Los Angeles. All right, this is the seventh time the Lakers have started 0-3 in their history. And with the exception of a couple of seasons, the results haven't been pretty. I don't think they'll be all that pretty this year either. This 0-3 start, to me, is concerning for the people that thought the Lakers were a 48-50 win team. I think they're a 500 team.
Woo.
41, yeah. Hey. I think they're a 500 team, and I think that's the proof we're seeing. Woo. I would be encouraged, though. Here's what I'm encouraged about if I'm a Lakers fan. Kyle Kuzma and Josh Hart are for real, and they are nice compliment. And I'll even go as far. Last night, I was like, man, Lonzo Ball.
Say it, finally.
I kind of like his release on his shot. I didn't like, he didn't close out on Patty Mills. He didn't play good defense on the final possession for the Spurs. But I kind of like Lonzo Ball last night, and he made a little bit more sense around LeBron.
Yeah, I think right now they're just in the kitchen, and it's tough to see how good it tastes, how well they're in there cooking it up.
I got a lot of experience in the kitchen, Marcellus.
You mean in the kitchen? You look like you're still in there. What are you talking about? You left the kitchen? Here's the thing. You know how it is. Grandma say, oh, boy, don't you come in here, Dad. We ain't ready. You touch that sweet potato pie before 45 minutes, it's hell to pay, right? You touching the sweet potato pie too early. It's not ready right now. It needs that perfect timing. LeBron signed up for a process and a project. With a young core that he trusts in, and he should. And what we're seeing is that young core feeling emboldened, feeling the bravado that comes from when you're playing with the king. And the king is like trying to figure out, how do I fit in perfectly with these guys without just going out there and taking over? And I think that calculation is the same thing we saw Miami Heat year one, 9-8 record, despite having the number one and number three player in the world in Dwayne Wade. And LeBron was just sitting there saying, I'm gonna respect you, Dwayne Wade, this is your house, but I deserve the master bedroom. They finally figured that out. And I think right now, they're trying to figure out what room is Brandon Ingram gonna get. I'm closer to LeBron.
He might not get, Kyle Kuzma may take that room.
Yeah, that's where they are.
Well, right now he's on the couch. But I'll tell you this right now. What I get from LeBron and covering him for years is that I feel like he's trying to talk himself into being patient. That's why he's continued to say, hey, I'm going to be patient. I want to teach these guys the right way to play. He's frustrated. He's frustrated. And right now we talk about the fire or how hot the kitchen is. It's burning in there right now because you look at the next eight games, six of those next eight games for Lakers, they're going to be underdogs. And that's for sure. And so they better win in Phoenix tomorrow.
Yeah, right.
That's for sure. But I would tell you this. Josh Hart, Kyle Kuzma, to me, Whitlock, the jury's still out on Lonzo. I'm not sold yet. I'm not sold.
I'm right there with you.
I just think that.
I said that for Marcellus' benefit.
Yeah, I'm not happy right now. I'm going to let y'all just keep digging that hole.
I said, but I will say that those are two studs that I think are long-term fits for LeBron James and Lakers. Everybody else, the jury's out. It's evaluation year.
I thought this was a 50-plus win team. Look.
50-plus? You've been watching the Clippers too long, man.
Man, I don't know what success looks like. Is that what you're trying to tell me?
You don't know what 50 wins
are
like.
First of all, don't let me start on my Clip City, Chip City. Man. All these Laker fans, can y'all win a game this year? I mean, we run LA. It's so easy right now. But here's the thing. LeBron will finally figure out the winning formula. These young players will feel empowered through the process of going through it. A shared experience with LeBron, not LeBron just being the cherry on top, but he's actually a part of the ingredients of success. Boy. That's empowering for a young quarterback.
Put a number on it. How many?
Right now?
I'm at 42, 41 wins.
I was at 48 before the season. I'm taking that down to 40.
To 40?
40.
That's not a playoff team.
I think it gets it. I think it gets the eighth spot with the 40.
Yeah, well, even 48 is on the fence of a playoff team in the Western Conference.
What number are you putting on?
You know, I'm going to stick to mine, but it's not 54. It's dropped down to
54. Oh, my God. You had him winning 54. You do it. That's a setup, Marcellus.
No, LeBron.
You trying to set him up so you can criticize him later.
LeBron with anything. LeBron's like nutmeg. What grandma say? Nutmeg go with everything. You put nutmeg and stuff, it's all good.
He ain't bacon. Bacon goes
good. Bacon goes with everything.
Whitlock and Wiley, it's time to put on our thinking caps. Chris Haynes and Mark Slareth are back with us as well. As you all know, I'm a journalist, and we've got our resident Ivy Leaguer, Marcellus, here. So we're going to take a deeper look at some of the big issues in sports. We've got a special cap for Marcellus. Yeah. Darnell, bring it out.
Oh, please, Oha.
Ivy
please, Oha. Take your time. Where's the Roseberry?
Where'd you go, to Idaho State?
Where's the Roseberry?
University of Idaho. The only reason I didn't go to Ivy League is because I wasn't convinced they had a good enough general studies program. So, like, you know what? I looked at Harvard and, yeah.
They didn't look back, though.
No, I was like, that general studies program ain't for me. I got to go somewhere where I can get me an education.
The Fresno State University.
Oh, yeah.
Okay. Almost as good as Ball State. All right,
home of horticulture, huh?
Let's move to the NBA.
Fresno.
Where we're seeing an offensive explosion so far this year. Through Sunday, 9 teams were averaging more than 120 points per game compared to just 2 last year. A fact that hasn't gone unnoticed by Warriors enforcer Draymond Green.
It's been called pretty tight, which, you know, we were told that. You know, defense isn't really an emphasis anymore in this league. I think you're seeing that all around the league with these high scores. You know, we know what the emphasis is, so it's just got to be better. We haven't done that in 3 games. Maybe to win 2 of them, but we caught us tonight.
All right, Draymond has a point. We're scoring up more than 6 points per game in the NBA and on the highest pace in almost 50 years. And as we've talked a lot about already this season, NFL scoring is also way up, on pace for an all-time record. I think all of this emphasis on offense has proved sports are getting soft, and in my opinion, they're getting too soft. I think people want to see great competition. And great competition includes great resistance. And the NFL and the NBA, man, they're turning everything into a video game. And this is NBA 2K. And then in the NFL, it's Madden 2018. And everybody's going for it on fourth down. It's illegal to hit anybody. I just don't like it in both leagues.
I love it. And I think it's a mistake to parallel more points to softness. I look at every league you're talking about, and there's still resistance. There's still hell to pay in the NFL. Ask the concussion protocol every single week. Ask all the guys who are getting carted off every single week. In the NBA, guys are still going out. We just had a brawl this weekend. Like, we're talking about this is a soft era.
First time we've had a fight in
10 years.
Well, it happened. It happened in the soft era, you want to call it. So it's crazy. More points, okay, in the NBA. 6 more points have been scored this year compared to last year. But 5 of them came from the 3 ball. Think about that. Every team is more efficient at shooting the 3 because, in part, they're all stressing it. So there's only 1 point left in terms of the softness or, oh, you're just shooting from farther and getting the extra point and reward. And that's from the free throw line, and that's from a 2-pointer made. So that said, it's not a softness argument.
Did you just hear Draymond say you can't guard anybody in the NBA? They've illegalized it the same as they've done in the NFL?
You know what? It's crazy. We all say that, and we say this era's soft. Well, there's nobody named Bill Laimbeer running across the lane clothesline of people. That hasn't happened since the early 90s. So that means Jordan.
Draymond is that guy.
Jordan is in a soft league. Kobe was in a soft league. Where's this line of demarcation that Jason Whitlock...
All these new rules, man.
It's always been new rules, man. Do you know I came into a soft NFL? You know why? You couldn't head slap. Oh, no, I thought my NFL was hard. So... Wait a minute now. I'm about to lose my degree up here. Right. But all that said, man, don't make that mistake. Well, don't conflate the two.
Well, listen, it has become softer. I don't think there's any question that you don't have the enforcers that you once had. There used to be guys like David Fulcher run across the middle. He wasn't there to cover anybody. He was there to knock people out. Yeah. That's what we used to do. And you were a part of that. Man, I can't tell you how many times I got snot bubbled on interceptions because some D lineman was going to blindside me that I've been holding all day.
So
it's happened. And that's the way it used to be. But what we've done is we're servicing the fan base that we've cultivated. Mm-hmm. That's what the league is doing right now. Yeah. We have cultivated. It's not old school fans anymore. It's people that grew up on fantasy football, fantasy basketball. So all we're doing is servicing that fantasy crowd that we've created. It mirrors, the game is mirroring what we're watching and what we're doing on the internet. We're playing fantasy, and that's inclusionary. You think about this. Old school football excludes people, right? Fantasy football includes people. Black, white, yellow, red, gender. Doesn't matter, male, female, yeah. Doesn't matter. Everybody plays. And so what it is now is it mirrors the game that we're playing on the internet. We're putting in our guys, and then we're watching football. And that's what it's become. So, listen, do I like it? No, I don't like it. But I understand it because $14 billion and growing isn't wrong. that's where they are right now.
Drop the mic, Mark.
NBA offensive players and NFL quarterbacks are in the same similar situation to where they're getting taken care of by the league. And you brought up the brawl that just happened with the Lakers. But people forget what initially started that. What initially started that was players and coaches being frustrated with the way James Harden is being officiated, being allowed to bump guys, initiate. He initiated the contact that sent Ingram almost to the stands. Get the hook, getting guys to hook them, you know, tactics along those lines, and then being allowed to get a few steps here after taking 2 steps. Yeah. Steve Kerr had some beef with that a few years ago. And so that's what initially started the whole brawl. But what I'm saying is this, is players feel like if James Harden or these offensive players are allowed to hook, get a couple of steps, on top of just being skillful players in the first place, that makes it very frustrating for everybody else involved to combat that. The same with quarterbacks. You're not being allowed to hit or, you know, however they want to be, you know, hit, and then getting these penalties. So there is a reason why these offensive numbers are up. And I have to make you take off that GED hat, Marcel. Because you're wrong in the aspect that, look, scoring is not soft. You're not calling it soft?
No.
It is soft. It is soft because check this out. There's another, let's combat this. In the NBA, it's a new offensive rebound rule where if you get the offensive board, you got 14 seconds on the shot clock now. Now you got to go and score faster.
Yeah.
So those are other reasons why. But they are being cuddled, the offensive players and the quarterbacks in the NFL.
That frustration would grow, obviously, if I were still on the field and obviously the quarterbacks are being taken care of. But you know what? I have to evolve because I know that the game before I got there evolved, and it was.
But you can't play. But you can understand.
It's a softer game
for me. But yeah, it is. But a person like you, you can understand Draymond Green's frustration in that he's not allowed to play a physical style of defense because the league is going to take
that. Created a role for Draymond in this league. They're making it harder for Draymond to be as valuable as he once
was,
which eventually may reach into his pocket.
Okay, but my question for me, do I want a league full of Draymonds or do I want a league full of offensive scores? Hand up for offensive scores. Sorry, I like salt. I like sugar, and I like points. And don't damn me if I like those simple things. I'm a primal human being. Like, who's over there like, nah, man, less sugar on that. Like, I want more points, and y'all try to act up here y'all purists.
I'll just say this. I think Mark, to me, helped me finally understand your point of view.
Oh, and he did?
He helped me understand
Mark, you want to do the
show then? He helped me understand your point of view.
I want another guy that wants less salt. Oh, you know what? I have a gourmet food company. Somebody asked me to make a sodium light version of my green chili product. I go, yeah, I tried that, and it wasn't salty enough. You know? Exactly. Get out of here with that sodium free.
Look, here's the point, and I think Chris helped you as well. In terms of,
we all help. You need some help. That's what we're here for.
A lot of tutors to get you. We have a league where we're making Steph Curry even more valuable than we are Draymond Green.
Yeah.
And Mark's point is like, hey man, people want to see Steph Curry. They want to buy Steph Curry jerseys. They don't buy a lot of Draymond Green jerseys. Steph Curry goes higher in most fantasy drafts than Draymond Green. I really do like Mark's point, and maybe I'm going to have to adjust, is that they are catering to this broader audience that they've cultivated through fantasy sports. Fantasy sports, I can remember when it started in the late 80s, early 90s, and it's had a dramatic impact on the way people digest or intake sports. And even though because I don't play fantasy sports, so it doesn't move me, but I understand virtually everybody I know does, and so they've adjusted for that, and maybe it's smart.
And the economy. I mean, it's just like he said, 14 billion plus. It continues to have that impact on the economy, which feeds us all. Let's respect that. And look, when you're on a football field, it's just like the pyramid of athleticism, like. No one raises their hand first and says, I want to play football.
But go ahead.
You know why? Because your hand was already put down. You ain't playing basketball.
I was a hell of a basketball player as a kid.
I know I'm going to earn my degree.
My nickname was Fat Magic, but go ahead.
Fat Magic. Damn.
We all know what we want to get into. And just like being a defender, I understood where the glory was. The glory wasn't sitting there being in the trenches like that on my side of the ball, even though on the edges you get more love than D tackle. But we look on the other side, you see a receiver, love. You see a running back, oh, that's love. Oh, you see the quarterback, don't even touch him. He wears a different color jersey. Are you on my team or not? Why you got on red every single day? Because he's protected. NFL has finally said, let's highlight that protection and at all costs protect them.
In all sports, offensive players are talented. They're going to make plays regardless. They don't need any extra help. Period.
All right, welcome back. Whitlock and Wiley here. We're joined now by Fox MLB analyst Nick Swisher. Let's look ahead to tonight's World Series.
I like that Whitlock and Wiley, man. That sounds good.
That sounds real good.
Right. Let's start with the former Red Sox hero Dave Roberts, whose stolen base in the 2004 ALCS ignited Boston's historic comeback over the Yankees. Nick, let's start there. We'll... Roberts have any awkward feelings returning to Fenway Park?
Oh no, I think this was a career defining moment right here, especially for Dave Roberts, also for Boston Red Sox fan in general. What a comeback. They ended up breaking the curse, winning the World Series. I hope that Boston has nothing but love for him. On the other side, he wants to win. There's no doubt about that. Playing in Fenway is a hard thing to do. That crowd can get fired up, man. I've been there before. So I think tonight is definitely they got their challenges ahead of them.
All right, let's dive a little deeper into the matchup. Better pitching and bullpen, advantage Dodgers. But better run production, offensive production, advantage Red Sox. Should the Red Sox be the favorites over the Dodgers?
Yeah, I think so. I think, you know, I got to put my big boy analyst pants on because my fan pants, man, you know, I'm a Yankee guy, right? So talking about the Red Sox is kind of tough. But let's give the Boston Red Sox what they deserve. 115 ball games they've won so far this year. Bringing over J.D. Martinez has been one of the biggest, out-of-season splashes so far in the game. Mookie Betts should win that MVP.
Mook.
This team knows exactly what they're doing, man. I'm telling you, Alex Cora, their manager, although being a first-year manager, obviously he was here in the postseason last year with the Houston Astros, so I think they feel exactly where they should be right now. They've got a whole heap of right-handed bats to combat those lefties for the Dodgers, so it should be a great series.
If the Red Sox win this series, are they in the conversation as one of the greatest teams of all time?
Yeah, I think if you think about most historic franchises, obviously, so you think of the Boston Red Sox. I know I think of myself, I think of the New York Yankees, and then I think of Chicago Cubs and the Boston Red Sox. You know, I think these teams are absolutely amazing. So I think with what they're doing, man, I mean, going for their fourth championship since 2004, I mean, that's nothing to shake your head at.
All right, Yasiel Puig, when he came into Major League Baseball, was polarizing.
Right.
He was a hot dog. A lot of guys didn't like it. A lot of guys on the Dodgers didn't like
right.
it. They've now gone the other direction.
Totally,
all
man.
In on Yasiel Puig.
Yes,
is
sir.
That why he's playing so well?
Yeah, I think so. I think when the lights are the brightest, you see the best Yasiel Puig. I think you're going to get the good with the bad. Obviously, I feel like he's an exciting player, but with that excitement comes some mental mistakes along the way. I think he is growing right in front of our eyes. I feel like he's been a fixture in the outfield for the Dodgers for a while now. So to see him having the success he is right now is amazing. The only thing that bothers me is that I wish I could get this Yasiel Puig in the regular season. Mm. This guy would compete for MVPs if he brought that energy each and every night.
Now, let's talk about polarizing. Manny Machado going back to Boston.
Yeah.
We all know what happened, a year or so ago?
Totally.
Sliding in the second against Dustin Pedroia. Hasn't been the same. Hasn't been seen, really, on the field since. Will Machado's bad blood versus the Red Sox be a factor?
I think as an analyst and as a fan, I hope it does, man. Mm. I want some drama. Mm. I think that's what makes the World Series exciting so far. I think with where we are right now, we've got two amazing historic franchises moving forward, and it's going to be the battle. We've put the Boston Red Sox down each and every time, saying they couldn't beat the Yankees, then they couldn't beat the Astros, and all that team does is win each and every night. So I think it's going to be an amazing series. I think the Dodgers have their challenges against them. I think the Boston Red Sox are the better team, but the better team doesn't always win.
Running into first base in the last series, Machado.
Yeah, right?
What side of the fence were you on?
It didn't look good. There's no doubt about that.
No, don't give me that. Get off the fence. Wasn't it intentional?
Yeah, I feel like it was bad.
It looked bad,
and whether it was intentional or not, if you're guilty by public opinion, that's exactly what you're going to be viewed as. Mm.
Clayton Kershaw, Chris Sale, who you trust more tonight?
Hey, I tell you what, man, I hope that whole belly button infection thing was a joke. Either way, you know, I hope.
I've had one of those.
You know what I mean?
You know what?
I mean, keep it clean, you know?
About a couple years ago, I had a marshmallow stuck in my belly button and it got infected.
I can't talk to you ever again. That's unbelievable, man.
That's unbelievable. I tell you what, man, I think Chris Sale at home, he's got that unbelievable fastball, but I think the thing about it is his velocity drops as the season progresses. So I think you won't see him hitting triple digits. Hopefully, if you're the Boston Red Sox, you can get 4 or 5 innings out of him. But the cool thing about it is I think we're realizing how important the starter in baseball is. That, you know, bullpenning and having openers not always is the best way to go.
Quickly, is Clayton Kershaw's postseason woes behind him, or are you still thinking?
I hope so, man. He's had a tremendous postseason so far this year. He's stepped up when his team has needed him the most. And maybe I'm a little biased because I'm a Clayton Kershaw fan,
man.
I think he stands for the right things.
Yes.
He's done great by the game. He's a great human being. You want to root for guys like that. So I think if he can pull this World Series off and bring it. 30 years, man, it hasn't been here in L.A.
If he can
bring that back here to L.A., man, that would be something to say for sure.
Nick, do you know who Birdman is?
Yes, sir.
Yeah, have you had a visit from Cash Money? You looking awful blingy.
You like that, man? Well, I thought I'd wear it a little bit today,
hot
you know?
Boy or something right now.
I feel good. I got a little swag today, you know what I'm saying?
Got a little rips
in this thing.
My favorite part of the show. No, it's not. It's anti-social segment.
Yeah, I'm lying.
I'm anti-social, but I do kind of like this segment because I get to take a dump on people. All right, Darnell Smith, our social media manager, is here.
What's going on?
To walk us through what's happening out on those Twitter streets.
On those streets out there.
What's popping?
There's been a lot going on, but we're going to start off with the Cowboys.
Right?
Who traded a 2019 first-round draft pick for Amari Cooper yesterday. Comedian Scooter Magruder tweeted an interesting point saying, "We could have just signed Dez Bryant back for zero draft picks."
Mm.
He also poked fun at how the Cowboys fans reacted to the trade. Take a listen.
Dad, we just traded for Amari Cooper.
We gave them a first?
No, this can't be right. This can't be right. Did we get like a second round pick back? Didn't we just give up a top 10 draft pick?
We went to the Super Bowl.
We could have got Josh Gordon for a fifth.
I'd give up a 32nd overall pick for Amari Cooper.
Can't give up a first for Earl Thomas? He's the same age as Calvin Ridley. But we can give a first for Amari Cooper. Like we just drafted Calvin Ridley.
We could have signed Dez for zero draft picks.
Technically, we could still sign Dez.
How's the Cowboys fans feel about this trade?
They probably feel the way he does until Amari starts producing results. Yeah. Then they'll all hop on board. Or if it goes poorly, they'll jump off board and be more criticism. But I love Scooter Magruder. He puts out a lot of funny videos.
Yeah, that was amazing. First time I ever got hip to him. I'm certain every single Cowboy fan felt one or more of those emotions right there because he was speaking facts. And I think that's always the basis of great comedy is it's actually factual based. And They Mr. Magoo their way here, some people want to say. They didn't know which way was up, but somehow, some way, they got a number one receiver. Maybe costly, depending on production. You're right.
All right, Darnell, what's next?
Yes, moving on to former NFL player Merrill Hodge, who wrote a book dispelling the myths. dispelling the myths about CTE and concussions in the NFL called Brainwash. He posted a picture of the cover on Instagram, and now the book is getting torn apart by people on Twitter, with people calling it disgusting and poking fun at Hodge. Whitlock, why so much hate for this book?
Because anytime you put the truth or any balance or any honesty into social media, there's going to be major resistance. Twitter is built on lies, and so if you inject any truth into it, there's going to be a reaction. I can't wait to read this book. Merrill Hodge had concussion issues, did his own research. I can't wait to read. I'm going to read it with an open mind.
Yeah, Merrill Hodge nearly died on the football field, I think twice even. Mm-hmm. Reading the book, obviously, a guy who is well vetted and knowing the experiences and the depths of what brain trauma can look like and the effects on an individual. So definitely that. And like you said, in our culture today, as soon as you step out of the norm, expect shots fired. So, I mean, it's almost like a compliment when someone's shooting at you. It's like, oh, I'm not following the herd. I'm not following the sheep. I'm actually out there trying to be a shepherd. Respect, Merrill. Go get it.
All right, Darnell, what's next?
Yeah, switching over to the NBA. It's no secret that Jimmy Butler and the Timberwolves aren't getting along. Butler was booed at the team's home opener on Friday, and on Monday posted a not-so-subtle reference to his current situation on Instagram with a famous quote from The Dark Knight saying, "You either die a hero or you live long enough to see yourself become the villain." Y'all like Butler embracing the villain role?
Love it. Not sure if I like that outfit, but love embracing the villain.
War of Roses.
And
right there.
I think, as I told you earlier, he's quoting The Dark Knight. Dark Knight Rises is actually the better movie,
Don't
Marcellus.
Don't do this again, man. Here you go again. Bang, bang. Debatable. No, the one before Bang, bang. The other one. That was the better movie. Why do you keep doing this, man?
Because The Dark Knight Rises was awesome. I watch it anytime it's on.
I noticed.
And I don't even like that type of movie, but I love that one.
Okay. Look, one, poetic. Two, it applies. I'm glad he said embracing. I'm glad it said embracing because your desire is never to wake up to be an underdog. Your desire is never to wake up to be a villain. You want to be the hero. You want to be the favorite. But when it's not the reality, it's okay. We know how to make lemonade out of this. And I think that this is a perfect thing for someone like Jimmy Butler because he had to climb up the hill in the first place to become Jimmy Butler. You think you going to now stop him from being who he wants to be? He's always overcome circumstances. So respect Jimmy.
Darnell, before you move to the next one, settle the Dark Knight versus Dark Knight Rises debate. Whose side are you on?
I know he got you your job, but chill out.
Ah, man. It's honestly really close. Oh, I like both. It is close, but the Joker character, though, in The Dark Knight, it's just different. Yeah, so I got to get a slight edge. I'm sorry, Whitlock. I'm sorry.
Keith Legend.
Keith Legend.
All right, what's next, Darnell?
Yeah, moving on to the Portland Trailblazers, who had a little fun last night embracing the spooky season. The team showed up to the Moda Center in Halloween costume, dresses everyone from Freddy Krueger to Tyrone Biggums and Stone Cold Steve Austin.
Oh,
do you guys like the adults getting dressed up for Halloween?
Love it, love it, love it. Halloween was one of my favorite holidays when I lived in Kansas City because I gave away the greatest candy in my neighborhood. Mm. I mean, the big, huge bag. Every kid would get something huge.
Costco size, huh?
Huge. And it got so popular over 15, 16 years. Kids would come from other neighborhoods just to go trick-or-treating at my house.
Nice. Were you in costume or you just was giving
occasionally. Okay. I'd have someone over to help me and we'd get in costume and greet people at the door.
Yeah.
But I love Halloween. Halloween was, as a kid, that was one of my favorite holidays.
Yeah, we
could
tell.
What you trying to say, Marcellus?
I had a candy. Or that's the end of the night. Oh, man, I'm with you, man. I love Halloween. Truth be told, I couldn't eat the other families and neighbors' candy. My mom was just, like, crazy. Like, mm-hmm. All the crazy people out there, side night, all that. But this year, my son and I, we're going to be Superman. So we have the same exact costume, but just the mini form and big form. Built-in muscles and everything. So coming to a neighborhood near you is going to be little Superman and black Superman. I'm coming out there, man. I'm there.
Perfect. All right, Darnell, what's next and last?
Yeah, I was watching The Herd this morning, and our guy Colin made an interesting comparison between this year's Lakers and the Bad Boy Pistons. Take a listen.
This team is tough and annoying and agitating and scrappy, and that's the way they're going to win. And this team is the Bad Boys with palm trees. I mean, you're going to have to win like the Pistons with palm trees.
Is this a fair comparison?
No. Colin sometimes goes too far. I wish he had consulted with me. I called him last night. I would have got him on something better than this. I don't see Isaiah Thomas. I don't see Bill Laimbeer. Joe Dumars was a shutdown defender. Dennis Rodman, John Sally.
To the core, a whole different.
Yeah, they played a lot of defense in Detroit. I think the Spurs scored 40 points in the first quarter last night.
Exactly. Yeah. Different brand of basketball. I just don't see a finesse basketball league, a finesse team. Everyone's slight of build outside of LeBron James and maybe Josh Hart. Everybody trying to pack on muscle because they know that they're slight. They don't have that mentality. They don't have that personnel. So they just had one fight. That doesn't make you the Bad Boy Pistons. You got to fight every night to become the Bad Boy Pistons.
You know, when you're a home run hitter like Colin, sometimes you strike out.
You got to.
And I think this is a strikeout.
You got to.
Colin
right?
And I, I'm going to call you tonight. We're going to have a long talk about the Pistons and the Lakers.
Yeah, out there.
Great job, Darnell. Great job.
Unbutton, Darnell. Unbutton, bro.
Nah, man. I'm a top button guy. I like to be different. So.
Let it breathe, brother.
Ball State on Thursday Night Football tonight. This Sir. Week, 4 o'clock kick. All right, today we're talking Eli Manning, who had his best game of the year last night, though the Giants lost and again fell to 1-6 on the year. I have Eli appropriately ranked at a 70 overall.
Look at you.
He's an all-star level performer. I have him at a 16 in job performance, a 20 in all-time greatness, 19 in character, and a 15 in authenticity. For a total of 70.
Look at you. Since you speak first, you think you're right. Let me clean this up a little bit. He's a better approval rating than that because he's not a low all-star. This guy is on the cusp of being a GOAT. Respect to Eli Manning, as I have him a 13 in job performance.
The cusp of being a GOAT. Did you listen to our conversation in A Block?
Yeah.
When you're dumping all over Eli?
And I will quote, you said he's a borderline Hall of Famer. Message. So we got that. 18 all-time greatness. Respect for his character because this is a guy
that wouldn't play in San Diego.
Yeah, I forgot that part. Why? You
yeah, wouldn't play for your Chargers.
He
refused to play for your Chargers, but perfect character.
That was a smart move too at that time when I was there. And then you talk about authenticity up there as well. Like his emotions that even kill personality is thorough for real. But I would say being in New York City. Media market, they're always trying to pull and criticize you. He's never stepped in it. He's never given them ammunition for that. He's a Manning who's lived up to that reputation.
I don't know anything about Eli. I don't know nothing about
him. That's probably good.
I know what kind of pizza Peyton likes. I know everything I want to know about Peyton Manning.
Right.
I know nothing about Eli. I can't go that high in authenticity because
really?
I just don't know. But I like Eli, and I think he's getting too much criticism.
How come you can't look at a guy who doesn't give you anything as giving you everything?
Pipe down. We got something more important to talk about.
All right. Let's do it.
Somebody has a book debuting today.
Oh, look at your boy.
Never Shut Up. And you know what? I'm jealous, man. I'm a writer, but you got a book. I don't have a book.
You haven't written a book yet?
No, I don't have. I haven't written a book, and because I can't do it, man. It's hard work, man. I bleed every time I write.
I get it.
And it's
put
hard.
Put all those essays together in one book. There you go.
I've done that. I've done a collection of my essays. But anyway, man, very proud of you. What's the book about?
Oh, the book is a memoir to inspire all you guys. It's a situation of everything that I went through, an unorthodox road to where I am right now, whether it's from Compton, South Central to Columbia. A lot of naysayers on that road, and then going from Columbia to the league, certainly, you know, that's a road less traveled. And I just want to inspire everybody that in spite of your circumstances and the adversity you face, you can actually realize your dreams, because I'm sitting here realizing my dreams, and there was a lot of moments along this path in which I didn't think I'd be here, bro.
I can't wait to read this book. It's in my dressing room. I really want to learn more about you and your family. I hope some stuff about you and your son and your daughter.
Yes.
And your wife is in here.
Yes, everything's in there except you, because I wrote that before I met you. So, don't be getting all jealous.
Is Charlemagne the God in here?
Charlemagne's in there, because I knew him before you. I'm messing with you.